going on, guys?
How's it going?
Hey, Dad. And Tracy did make it.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I don't see her online yet, so she'll probably hop on when we, when we're half done. So how's everybody tonight? Oh, let's introduce James. You want to introduce yourself?
Sure. Can you hear me?
Yep, sure.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
We can.
Well, I'm James Stowe. What do you want me to say?
You can say your website and how awesome why are you our guest tonight?
Why am I here?
Yeah.
I drew some pictures for my son is why I'm here. And they just went everywhere on the internet, which is good. That's really awesome. I have a blog, jamesstowe.blogspot.com, and that's where everyone found them. I didn't mean for it to happen. It just kind of did, which is kind of cool.
Can you throw a link to that onto the Skype chat window so that I can...
Sure.
I have it somewhere, but just to be sure, you know, better safe than sorry. I'll be writing show notes as we go, so...
And I am working on the new website, so I am going to be a little bit quiet.
Thank God. Maybe Randall and I can talk.
But as soon as Tracy comes on, I'm done.
That's right.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
So James, why don't you tell us a little bit about... So he's our guest. We asked him to come on because of his website and the really awesome character sheet cards that he produced. So, they were for your son, is that right?
They were, yeah. He just turned 8 over the weekend, and what he wanted more than anything was to play Dungeons & Dragons for the first time, because he's seen me play it.
Then you're raising him really well, then, is what you're saying.
You know what? To be honest, I was a little little worried. I wasn't sure if 8 was a proper age to introduce somebody to role playing, but you know what? I'm really glad I did it.
That's when I started.
Oh yeah? See, yeah. I didn't start till much, much later. I was in high school before I ever played any kind of role playing game.
Yeah, I was 13.
Yeah, my brother is 3.5 years older than me, so he.
See, I was an only child, so. Yeah. I had to seek it out.
Yeah, he went on to AD&D, and I stayed with basic, the red box, and the followed by the blue box and teal and gold, black and gold, whatever. But yeah, so I was 8 when I began. Of course, I wasn't a very good role player at 8, but you know, that was okay.
You know, I was really surprised at how well they did. Actually, I had 4 7-8-year-olds. And they played, God bless them, for like 2 hours, which for 8-year-olds, that's pretty good.
That's impressive, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Two of them gave up in the middle of like the second big fight.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two, they were like, we're staying at this table until that guy goes down. I was very, very impressed with that.
You know what that really means, Thaddeus?
What's up?
James is telling us actually that we've got the wrong guest on the show. His 8-year-old son needs to be the one that's the guest. Yeah.
You know
that's
what? Right. He really wanted to be here.
Yeah, but then Randall would have to watch his language, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
F that noise.
Yeah. Well, I say Randall because 99% of the time we start out trying to be pretty clean. For the round table, and then Randall will say something of it. Just forgetting.
You know, I've been listening to some of your older ones, and I've noticed that like halfway through, just goes off the rails with the language.
Yep. Hey, James, I'm the cranky old man of the group, so that's
when it gets close to Randall's bedtime. You see.
Yeah, that's right.
Hey, I totally understand that. I'm 37. I'm feeling pretty old. 2 kids.
Shh, baby.
Dude, I have a grandson.
So. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Okay, no, I don't feel so bad.
So, yeah. I consider myself like the second generation of D&D players. Like Gygax and those guys, first generation, all 70s all the time. About 1980s, when I 79, 80s when I started playing. So I'm sort of like second generation D&D. So I've been at it for a while now.
Cool.
But
yeah, you know what? I'm going to admit, I've been role-playing for a long time, but I never really got into Dungeons & Dragons until 4th edition. I don't know if you want to cut me off right now or...
No, that's but, cool. I mean, I just recently back, well, as of 2008, got my wife into playing Dungeons & Dragons, and she really had never role-played at all before, but 4E was what pulled her in because of the way the rules were structured and things, and she loved it. So
yeah, that's kind of why I got into it. I'm like, oh, you know, I can introduce a whole bunch of people to this game now.
And James,
with 4E,
I got to admit, man, you know, I've only been playing Dungeons and Dragons now for, you know, a little over 2 years. Yeah, a little over 2 years. So, I, you know,
yeah, we don't discriminate. We're not we. Pretty much all of us here, we kind of joke about it, but we think the edition wars are bullshit, and we're not really ageist. I mean, Randall and I are all constantly telling people to get off our lawns, but it's really not. I mean, you know, I think,
pretty egalitarian.
You know, yeah, I'm up for all kinds of ages and editions, you know.
Now, do you guys play anything else, or is it just Dungeons and Dragons?
Oh no, I play a vast array of.
Excellent. Vast arrays are good.
Vast array.
I focus on four. I mean, if I had a good Star Frontiers or Traveler game or something come along, I'd probably play that. But I don't have the resources in my area. So, but
yeah, and I try to play whatever I can. I'm trying to learn about, you know, every game that I've missed over the last, you know, 30 years. So, I'm catching up. Though I've been having this really serious love affair with Fiasco lately that's been taking up a lot of my gaming time.
You know, I've heard of that game, but I've never played it, and it sounds fascinating.
It is phenomenal. But you really have to have the right group of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very cooperative, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, it's cooperative story destruction is what I would describe.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
You work together.
That's
to
the
just
best kind of cooperative.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you got to be careful, because when you say cooperative to a board gamer, because I also have a love of board games, and a cooperative game to a board gamer is everyone focusing on the same goal and trying to meet the same goal, whereas Fiasco, the story is cooperative, but there's lots of, you know, player-to-player interaction and conflict, let me say. So because not every person in the story has to have the same goal. So it's not cooperative in that sense, but it is cooperative in the sense that everyone's adding to the story equally.
Right. Well, you are working towards a common goal, and that goal is to make just a seriously screwed up storyline.
Well, yeah, that's the metagame, but I mean within the game itself, players aren't there. It's not like you're a team of people like a party in D&D. In most cases, the party has a goal. And, you know, they all work together to achieve that goal. The Fiasco is not necessarily like that. So, and Tracy just got added to the call if we just want to stop and say hello real quick.
Which is why I'm talking Tracy. Now.
Yeah, I know.
Hello.
Hi there.
You guys can hear me, right? Okay.
Yep, we can hear you.
Sweet.
No, I didn't hear you say that.
Who are you again?
I'm just some goof-off editor guy.
So we're talking to James Stowe.
Hi, James.
Yes.
Hi there.
The awesome artwork guy.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I've been astounded by the just universal positive reaction to these things. You know, usually it's the internet, so you expect 60% everybody's okay with it, and then the rest of them hate you. But this is like across the board, everybody, everywhere I've looked, everybody's been like, this is awesome. And that's cool.
There's a significant cute factor.
That helps, yes.
Yeah, it's
drawing
like,
cute you know, things like, does oh, help. Yeah, right now I'm drawing a zombie kitten.
There you go.
Nice.
Don't show it to Tracy. She doesn't like zombies or dungeons or dragons.
I love dragons. Why do you keep saying this nonsense about dragons?
This is an odd podcast for you to be on, then.
So here's the deal. So, James, I was looking at the character sheets, and not only is the art fantastic, which it is, but I actually noticed that you sort of changed up some of the powers and stuff to make it a little more friendly to the younger set.
Sure. Yeah. I wanted these kids to have fun. So I got rid of all the stuff that bogs down combat, or the stuff that I just thought, you know, this was a birthday party, so I didn't want to break out a bunch of books and go, okay, look, here's this giant character sheet with like 4 pages, and you're going to have to figure out all these things. So I normalized all the damage. You don't roll you roll one die. I gave everybody, they got to take home a 20-sided die. It's their first 20-sided die.
Good touch.
That was the one, the only die they needed was the 20-sided die. And I gave each skill just like one thing it could do. So if you wanted to, if you wanted to jump, then you use acrobatics. Or if you wanted to try to find somebody, then it was nature. If you wanted to figure out how many hit points something had, then it was like dungeoneering. So they had a kind of a grasp on what the skills did. Not even on the sheet, but like off the sheet when I started the game, I have an old kitchen table that I painted with chalkboard paint, and I then gritted out with white paint so that I can draw my own map on the thing. And so I drew them a little clubhouse that they lived in, and I let them tell me what was in every room and stuff. I gotta tell you, a lot of toilets in that particular clubhouse. Eight-year-old boys, they seem to be a little toilet obsessed. But beyond that, that was a lot of fun. And I gave each of them a little chest. And I said, anything that you get in the game, you put in your chest and no one can take it. And then I told the guy who got there was one class that had the thievery skill. And I said, okay, now secretly between you and me, you have the thievery skill. So that lets you steal stuff out of other people's chests. The only thing I really needed to walk them through was the math. I just had to help them do the math to keep things going, but they got everything else. They got movement, like they totally understood speed, and they understood at-wills and encounters and dailies. And, I was really astounded that if you simplify it just a little bit, they can totally grab it and have so much fun with it. I was really, really happy with the result.
Nice.
Well, I love the idea. Yeah. I love the idea of the normalizing the damage. It's kind of a further blending of the board games that Wizards put out, right? Because that's how all the characters in the board games work.
Oh, I've not played any of those.
Yeah, in the board games, all you're doing is rolling a d20. The damage is static that your characters do. You're doing, you know, between 1 and 3 points of damage, and so one dice for the entire game.
Oh, yeah, well, that's exactly what I was going for. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, shoot, I'm not as novel as I thought I was.
Let me tell you, several wonderful theories that have changed the face of science on the planet have been consecutively dreamt up and tested by two different people in two different areas without any knowledge of each other. So
there you go.
Yeah. Don't feel bad about coming up with an awesome idea that somebody else happened to also come up with.
You're in good company, man. So yeah.
It's sweet. Well, I'm really glad that you guys dug it. Yeah. I mean, ultimately I can see myself going with this particular idea for a while. I can't tell you how many people are just asking me for these things I've forgotten. I mean, they can keep me busy, just the internet asking me to keep doing stuff. like girls, for example. They're like, but there's no sheets for girls. I'm like, well, you know what? That's right. There aren't any. There should be sheets for girls. I have a daughter.
Have you considered at all pairing up with Enrique or Newbie DM on his D&D Kids game that he does? Or
You know what? I've gotten one or two inquiries along those lines. I don't think from either of those people. You know what? The fact that this has connected me to this community in a way that I would never have expected it to is really cool. I'm going to take every advantage of this. I'll do whatever at this point. I do this kind of stuff obsessively for fun, you know? Might as well do it with people who also do it obsessively for fun.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the greater D&D community.
Excellent. I am glad I'm here. Don't shut the door. I'm having a lot of fun. This is cool.
Well, good.
I just wrapped up my I was running a campaign for adults. Just wrapped it up this Sunday. So now I have nothing to do. It's perfect. I get to work on this stuff.
Now, did you create cool character sheets for them, or is this the first time you've done that?
You know what? The insider for just for like paperwork and for like leveling and stuff, it's so easy. That I used to when I first got into Dungeons & Dragons, I'm like, I'm making all these custom sheets and they're going to be awesome. Yeah. And then I'm like, but they're leveling up every like two or three sessions. I'm going to kill myself. I'm not doing that. Mm-hmm. So I just do the insider. But I do a lot of like handout stuff.
Oh,
and,
cool.
And yeah. I like to I use Homebrewed Worlds. I don't like to like do modules or settings. I'm more of a story guy than I am a combat guy. Like I actually this last campaign I worked with a second GM and he did all the combat. All the combat.
Hello?
Yep. James, we've lost James. We've lost our guest. Ladies and gentlemen, there'll be a brief pause while we try to get our guest back.
There actually will be no pause. We're still recording, so yeah. Entertain the audience. Sam, entertain the audience. Sam,
there you go. You try to get a patter going, and you just crap all over it. It's like
I totally got dropped out, didn't I?
Yep, you sure did.
Yeah,
I was on a roll there too.
Did everybody get dropped, or was it just me and James?
You got dropped, but you got hopped right back on, and James took a while. So
okay.
Okay, where was I? Because I was monologuing.
Well, you said that you did some cards for an 8-year-old or something. I don't know.
Oh, no.
No, you were
saying... I'm done.
No. No, you only dropped on, like, you probably maybe said one sentence in between. Yeah. So, yeah.
Okay.
Well, you weren't off very long.
All right, good. Awesome. I have no idea where I was, though.
As to the question of the newbie DM's RPG kids, I believe that he uses a different die for his main system. So that would take a little work to change those into something that fit his system.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just saying, you know, he's proven that he's really interested in creating a really solid system for kids, and you have great art that... you know, works in a very similar system. You know, it's like getting a little bit of peanut butter in your chocolate, right?
Mm. You know, I could totally see, like, running this at a convention or stuff for kids. That would be cool. Give an excuse for guys like me to bring their children to conventions. That would be pretty awesome. You know, I at the party, I actually, I was kind of, like I said, I was kind of worried about introducing it to kids so young. I made sure that all the parents knew what I was doing. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to introduce your kids to Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. If you have a problem with that right now, you should know that that's what we're doing. So,
you didn't want to get angry phone calls from parents later?
That's right. You, what are you doing? He came home with this thing. I've never seen a dice like this.
How did that feedback go, though? I mean, what did the parents say?
You know, everybody was cool. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's great. That's awesome. You nice. Do that. Oh, a few of them are like, why are you even asking me? So that's good. Mazes and Monsters, that era is over.
Yeah, good. So, it's about time. So, maybe that's the death knell for that. Yeah, it'd be nice.
James, where do you live?
I live in Tacoma, Washington, right below Seattle.
Okay. Yeah, I'm thinking you should totally set up like a table at PAX and run a
oh, that would be awesome. I'd love to do that.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, that kind of thing. I used to actually do fantasy illustration for a living back in the 90s. And then I had kids and got a real job.
Well, James, where would we have seen your work, man?
I've been in like 100 and some books. I was mostly working for White Wolf in the 90s.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
So
okay.
I drew a lot of horrific, horrific things that my kids can never see. Although I was one of the like anchor artists for Changeling, and that was cute stuff.
Okay.
So is that what drove you to get a real job? Is you didn't want to have to hide your artwork anymore?
No, it was totally money. I love fantasy illustration, but wow. I don't understand how people make a living at it. I mean, I'm sure there are definitely people out there who do.
I was going to say the short answer to that is that not very many people actually do.
Yeah.
And I've done it off and on since. But there was a time there, like in the mid-90s, that is what I did for a living. I went to did the conventions and all that kind of stuff. I was in Georgia at the time, which made it a lot easier to connect with White Wolf.
Yeah.
But I did, even then, I did some, I did a lot of Sword and Sorcery. I think that's what it was called. Mm-hmm. Their open source D&D brand and Necromancer games, and I did some World of Warcraft books back when they were publishing some open source World of Warcraft stuff.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So you got quite a pedigree. And, I mean, are you formally art trained or is it all self-taught? Or?
I went to art college, for sequential art of all things, which is the oddest art degree ever. Do you know what sequential art is?
Yeah, learn how to draw comic books, right?
That's right. It's the fancy, fancy word for drawing comics. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I actually have a bachelor's in comic books, which is very strange.
Speaking of comics, this is a good segue to one of our hosts was actually in a comic strip just the other day, if I remember right. The quiet host.
You don't recall correctly. No, I was. D20 Monkey did it.
Oh yeah, I followed D20 Monkey. That's a great strip.
Yeah, there's Tracy and, if I believe right, Wang in the comic strip together.
Of that one, yeah. I did not. Oh,
that was that the poorly blurred out. That's unfortunate. That was you.
I didn't draw it.
She just wrote it. That's all.
I didn't write it.
You're right, though. He does. He maybe he should go back over that and blur it just a little bit more.
Yeah, there was definition in that blur. Exactly. That was like not.
I'm so offended by that. I can't even keep a straight face with that.
Whatever. You're like going, show us some more.
There were comments asking for that, though.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
For more blur?
For less blur.
Oh, jeez.
I posted it on Google+, and one of the guys, and I said, like, if your coworkers are likely to be offended by blurred bits, then you might not want to open it at work. Because, like, I don't like doing the whole not safe for work thing when it's obvious that I'm looking at it at work and, like, my company.
Yeah, that's a little, yeah. Oops. Yeah.
So somebody replied with, my coworkers would be offended that it's blurred. So that was funny.
No, Brian Patterson is a heck of a dude. I've been featured in his comic a couple of times, and he is just pretty, he's funny and he's talented. And
his storylines are really good, and his art is top notch. He's really good. One of the, like, five or six comics I follow on a regular basis, he's really good, yeah. And it's about D&D. That doesn't hurt.
That's right.
Yeah, I totally squeed when he told me that he was going to do a comic on me. I was like, yay! Sweet!
Yeah, so it's a nice moment.
Shoot, now I need to get in that comic.
Get in line, buddy. Get in line.
Dang it. Is it a long line?
It's a long line.
I don't like lines.
Yep. Well, he does who he wants, so it's not like like there's actual no one's got numbers or anything. So, I mean, you've got the talent to do your own. What are you talking about?
Well, that's what I was gonna say.
You know, I on occasion do like I'll do a comic and then I'll lose interest and I'll stop, and then I'll do another one and then I'll stop.
See, that's the beauty of this is that you can immediately push yourself up to the top of the line by just drawing one featuring yourself anyway. And send it to him as a guest spot.
There you go.
When he doesn't have time.
I'll do a guest strip. That's excellent. I would do it. There, yeah. I'm putting it out right there. I'll do a guest strip.
And your stock is hot right now, so.
There you go. That's right. It would benefit both
strike
of us.
While the iron
there
is
you
hot.
Go.
Yeah. Just put lots of Wang in it, and you know he'll lick it.
I will Wang it up. There'll be all nothing right. but penis. I can say penis because we're into the show for a bit.
Yeah. And that is the quote of the night is there will be lots of penis. That's going to be the title of tonight's episode.
Great. I'm glad knowing how I've become internet famous. I'm glad that that's the title. The guy who did the sheets for kids. He's on. There's going to be a lot of penis show. Excellent. Yeah.
Wholesome. This is wholesome. So yeah, we'll be pushing this to parents. Parents, if you want to find out about how to get your kids into D&D,
that's right.
Listen to this episode.
Hey, we're at least using the biologically correct terms. We're not.
Yeah. It's not like we're saying dick or cock or anything.
Yes,
I'm
a biologist. We are talking about anatomical body parts.
I can't wait to tell my wife how this went. Oh, it went good. So we all just started talking about penises.
No. Hey, you know what? We're like,
Isn't that every podcast?
We're like 30 minutes in talking about penises. Is that's just like right on time.
Yeah.
Besides, I have, I'm sitting here thinking about what else I have to talk about, and I got nothing, so.
Well, and there are worse things. You could be known for hating dungeons when you're a big fan of a game called Dungeons & Dragons, so.
That's true, yeah.
So the title is actually Lots of Penis and Dungeons, okay.
Yeah. Well, there is
the logo for that would be terrible.
No!
Tracy, would you like to share that theory with us?
I am perfectly happy to write out the theory. I do not say the theory aloud.
Really? You're going to leave us hanging like that?
Go ahead and type it. I'll read it out loud.
Oh,
I'm
sure,
not
yes.
afraid.
I'm not afraid either. I'll read it right after Randall does. That way it'll be said twice.
Oh, it's gotta come from Tracy. Like, this is her baby.
Oh, I'll do it in her voice.
So you guys are talking about the whole theory that dungeons are just basically big vaginas and the adventurers are the sperm that go in and inseminate the treasure and create dragons? Is that the theory?
That is the theory.
Greater internet dungeon theory, yes.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
I think it came from the strip. We were joking. Brian had said something that he was hoping that people would realize he's more than just dick jokes or something, and I was like, well, I'm all about dick jokes. And that's how we ended up on vaginas and dungeons, and it just went on from there.
Wow.
And it was all me. I, of course, drove this.
Yeah.
Ever deeper.
Oh,
no.
Listeners, at this point, I'd like to note that if you're having an uncomfortable stirring someplace south of your belly button, please turn off your podcasting device.
Probably need some talcum powder.
Yeah, that's right. That's going to chafe.
Oh, man.
We're working blue tonight, kids. There you go.
So...
Wow, yeah.
Yeah, I can't follow that.
All right, yeah.
Oh, sorry. See, this is why I didn't want to talk about it.
Anyway.
Oh, that just finished it up, Tracy. We had already started to talk about it, so that's all right.
Do we have any Twitter topics? We can tell people that after we got finished talking about dicks, we started to decide to talk about D&D.
Well, we can talk. Do you want to talk about D&D, or do you want to talk about the blogging community shakeup that just happened?
What's that?
What was it? Adam. What's his last name? Blind Geeks. Post that set the internet on fire for a couple days.
I guess I missed this.
The one about the tiers of D&D posters, bloggers.
Wait, I guess fill us in, Thad, because I totally missed this, or it didn't register at me at some level or something.
So, okay, so there's a website.
AKA Adam Page, yeah.
Right, but there's a website that he wrote a guest post for.
Online DM.
Yeah, right. and the reason he wrote the guest post was because of something that person said. Right.
Online DM. Okay, let me go back all the way to the back to the start of it. Online DM wrote a post about how he went to Gen Con, had kind of met a bunch of people that he followed online, and it to him it felt like no one knew who he was, even though he was trying to basically build for himself an internet or online presence.
Okay.
And so he felt like that there were these quote unquote top tier bloggers who everybody was like, you know, like, oh, hi, I'm so and so. And they're like, oh my God, I love your blogger, I love your podcast or whatever. And then there was other people who were like, oh, I'm this blogger, I'm this guy on Twitter. And people are like, oh, I have no idea who you are. And so he kind of felt like there is like a clickiness to the D&D community, like an elitism. And so Adam Page, a.k.a. Blind Geek, wrote a post about his experience and how there are kind of tiers and how you really have to put a lot of work in the community to be recognized by the community. And he also notes a fake persona that he created that was actually put out a lot of content in a very short amount of time, but you know, no one really caught on to the website or the persona, the Twitter persona that he had put together. And so that's the impetus of it. And then, so from there, this big discussion started about, are there tiers in bloggers, you know, are there top tier bloggers versus kind of, you know, second and tertiary, or is that all perceived, or, you know, how does that work?
I think the only thing I could say there is that, one, yes, it also depends upon what tier what are you talking about on your blog? Are you talking about 4E stuff? Are you one of the notorious, or should I say quite vocal, old school bloggers? You know, those guys have a tendency to be a pretty strong group. I didn't meet any old school bloggers really over at Gen Con, so, because I hung out with a lot of 4E bloggers. But, you know, I don't know. You know, sure, there are going to be sites that are huge, and there's going to be – I mean, I got a little tiny site, but, you know, I'm pretty active on Twitter, so people kind of know who I am, but, you know, and I do this, you know, so.
So I responded to that to Adam's post, and basically what I said was this. It's human nature to separate and categorize things, and it just sort of happens naturally over an amount of time. If someone is putting out a lot of good product and a lot of good thoughts and a lot of good words that lots of people like to read, they end up in the top tier. I don't know what combination of talent and advertising and marketing and all that leads to that, but it's what happens, right? And the thing, though, is that it's not possible for somebody who maybe is in the top tier to respond to every single person that talks to them. And the example I gave was, imagine if Will Wheaton was going to respond to every single tweet that anyone ever tweeted at him, and every single response to every single blog post he ever wrote, and every single anything that he ever posted anywhere. He would spend his entire day just responding to people and not doing the things that he needs to do as a person, right? So, in other words, when you start getting popular or famous or whatever you want to call it, if you're at the top tier, you start to have to pick and choose who you listen to and respond to, because with being more famous, you get more people that want to bend your ear and talk to you. And, you know, who knows what that combination of luck and talent and all that is that makes someone listen to you, but it's just not possible to listen to everybody.
Yeah. Okay, so there's two things I want to hear on this subject, and one is I want to hear Tracy's take on it, because in most of the conversations about quote-unquote top-tier bloggers, she was mentioned, whereas, you know, sorry, Randall and Sam and me, none of us were. So,
well, no, yeah.
And yeah, then I also want,
but I didn't say I was. I was just.
Oh no, no. I'm just saying. I want to
nature.
Not at all.
But I also want to hear from James because you know James kind of mentioned that he feels like he's just kind of now exploding on the scene in the D&D community. So from you know here's a guy who is suddenly getting big, and I want to know what you know his take on the tiers are. And then Tracy is someone who's been constantly mentioned, and her name's been thrown around in this whole thing. So,
well, for me, I don't know if I've ever experienced a tier. I mean, I was always very comfortable. You know, I run a game. I don't do a D&D specific blog, at least up until this point. You know, I follow a lot of Dungeons and Dragons blogs because I like what people have to say. But I've never felt super compelled to seek people out or like get feedback from them. Like I've been very happy just kind of lurking, you know. But now that everyone kind of has shared my thing in a very organic way, haven't felt that there's a tier because everyone across the board has been like, this is cool. And I've tried literally to respond to everyone who that I can find who is trying to get feedback from me because I'm like, you know, if you're interested in what I'm doing, then I'm going to try to respond to you as best as I can. So I don't know if I'm the best person for this. I think I've skipped a few tiers. I'm not even sure I'm in a tier. I'm just kind of, you know. But I've felt nothing but openness to this whole from this whole community. Like everybody has been super cool, which is awesome. Like I think that's one of the best things about this experience is that everyone has just even if they're like, oh, why did you do fourth edition, which is like the worst thing anyone has said to me at this point. Even that is like, you know, well, that's what I got. So I don't know what I think my experience differs greatly from certainly your guys' experience. And maybe up until like last week, I was probably the people that they're kind of talking about. But then again, I wasn't looking for any kind of exposure either. Like I wasn't looking to be fit in a tier. I was happy with my hobby. And I think a lot of people are like that, though. It really is all about what you're looking for. Like if you're looking for exposure, if you're looking for to get up to the next tier, then you're always going to be frustrated that there's a tier above you.
I think, well, and on top of it, I think people tend to pick up on that, even if we try to hide it. I always feel uncomfortable talking about this because it's easy for someone to interpret it as in like I think so highly of myself or I'm a jerk or something like that. So if
forget about how you think they're going to interpret it, Tracy. Just
I know, okay. I know. I think a lot of the people who end up in this quote unquote top tier have a sincerity to their love of what they're doing, and it shows through. Now, sincerity itself isn't enough. You have to. I think you need some skill in being able to convey your thoughts in a clear manner and to get that sort of attachment through the community.
Did I get dropped again?
No.
No, you're still there.
Inadvertently, that was very funny. Or did I get kicked off again?
If you'd like me to drop you, I can knock you off the call real quick. Oh, who's still here? He did drop.
I'm here. Yeah, so did James.
Thaddeus and... Oh.
Wow.
Well,
okay.
Tracy, you're still there, aren't you?
Is everybody here? Okay. I just stopped recording and started again just in case. Okay. Looks like we lost James.
Was that me again or just everybody?
That was you and James again.
Yeah, that was me. I was gone.
I hate Skype.
I thought that was just a really long dramatic pause, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. I actually think there's someone in the Rocky Mountains that's probably just plugging in and taking off the Skype receiver. Probably, yeah, probably. Just said, plug it in. Just kidding. Plugging it back in. So it's you West Coast guys that are having the issue. So,
so Tracy, you want to finish your thought?
Yes. I mean, I think there are lots of things that lead someone to getting a connection with a wide audience. And I mean, I think that's what we're talking about here is the people who top tier tend to be able to, for some reason or other, make a connection with the audience. And the people like that. It gets really difficult for me because I'm well known now. I never in a million years would have thought that would happen. One of the best, somebody who was in the industry once gave me some really good advice about, like, basically this, everyone thinks there's this line between, you know, a fan and someone who's a pro and producing content. And you never know when you cross that line. People who you think are on the other side of the line probably have no idea, don't think of themselves that way at all. And they're just being fans too. They happen to be able to write occasionally for some money, but they don't view themselves as any different. It's just that, you know, their time often gets shortened that they can spend online or that they can talk to other people. And the other thing is that there are people out there who will try to take advantage of them. And over time, it does, you do start wondering what agenda somebody has when they approach you. Like, because there are people who will try to use you.
That's when I make them pay me.
Right.
Yeah, that would be my solution too. Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely...
go ahead.
Sorry. I was just going to say, I've definitely gotten some angry emails from people. Well, not overly angry, but like, have you read my thing yet? Why haven't you talked about it on your site? And I was like, well, I haven't had time to talk about it on my site yet. I'm really sorry. But I've been a little busy. and like, I feel bad. Like, what, you know, when I'm getting 5 of those a month, it starts to really cut down on the time I have to create and the time I have to spend with the community and stuff like that too. So it's kind of a balancing act that I haven't figured out yet, and I know I'm far from perfect at this.
I think at some point you just literally have to... Well, here's a very tiny example. I was talking to Lindsay the other day about this, and it's like, a lot of people do Follow Fridays, right? And on Twitter. And I try to thank the people that do that, but it's getting to the point now that so many are doing it that, because I've got nearly 1,000 followers, and so it's like a lot of people are doing it, and which is great, but I can't stop and thank each one individually. I just don't have time to do it anymore. So I've gotten to the point now where I'm doing like a blanket thank you at some point during the day, and then probably eventually over when I hit over 1,000 or whatever, I'll probably stop thanking them for that because I just don't have time to do it. And it's not because I don't appreciate it. It's not because of anything like that. But you know that people like, you know, Dave the Game and stuff like that are getting all kinds of those Follow Fridays, but you don't see them mentioning those kinds of things because they're too busy. They got other things going on.
Well,
so,
the only time I ever thank someone for doing that is if they say why. Because I usually don't do a Follow Friday unless something strikes me as, you know, every once in a while I'll be like, oh, you should follow this person because, okay, I think I did it to you the other day, Bedworks. I said,
follow this
guy because we have good D&D conversations, you know?
Yeah. And I replied, I think.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Know.
But if I'm just in this list of people, I don't bother to respond to that.
Yeah. I try to, every once in a while during the day, and I don't always do this, but I do try to like at all of them in one and say thanks for it. And part of it, too, is not only that I don't have time or something, it's just if I thank each person individually that fills up my stream and then other people get upset that I'm filling their stream up with these messages that they consider noise. So there's this weird and hard balancing act between, you know, being active, replying to people, having conversations, and then having a lot of people say, oh, you're just filling up my Twitter stream. Why are you doing this? And I know
because I hardly see you. I mean, you're not. I mean, compared to someone, it's just some folks in my stream. You hardly tweet at all. So I don't.
Yeah. I've cut back my tweeting. Like I used to tweet a lot more, and then people started really complaining, and I was like, okay, I understand your point, but I don't really know what to do now. It's much better now that Twitter. You have to follow both people in order to see it. That's made it a lot better in some ways, but and hurt in others. But yeah, it's this weird balancing act, and I have 2,200 people following me. Right. So if
Holy
I say something,
cow. That's a lot of people.
Right, and
well,
if so,
she's top tier. That's what happened.
Yeah, yeah, she sure is.
So
what am I even doing on this podcast?
No.
Listen, if you take the other three of us and you put all of our followers together, we might rival Tracy. So
yeah,
yeah.
Hey, James, at least you'll get at least 12 other people that know who you are now.
Yeah,
yeah.
My mom,
sweet.
My mom will totally probably start following you after you're on this podcast. So.
That's right.
That's what I'm aiming for, the moms.
You get six calls for custom art, so for free, of course, because they can't pay you at this point.
Yeah.
I've been there.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. I've heard other artists say the same thing, so I feel your pain.
So I don't throw that number out there as a way of bragging, but just like if you think about if you have fewer followers than that, and you think about the number of responses you might get to a pretty interesting tweet that you post. Imagine how sometimes, you know, there are times I can get 20 responses and I'm like, I can't reply to you all. And I'm really, really sorry, but that's insane because, you know, then everybody wants to have their conversation about it, and which is cool. And I love, but I also have a day job and a husband and a house and stuff like that. Sorry.
Well, and you know, this topic brushes up against one that, who was it? Robles was saying about, you know, where do you split the line between people who you're interacting with on Twitter just either professionally or as acquaintances, and then who are real friends, you know, and how does that even work? You know, and at what point does that person become a friend, or are they still just this, you know, acquaintance I know on the internet, if you will? So, you know, right. It's still with this kind of phenomenon, it's a moving target, so you know, well, it's kind of hard to determine that.
And someone
brought
up
all the guys. Yeah, I'm sorry, Tracy. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say somebody brought up the excellent point that you know, a fair number of us do go to conventions, so we've met in person, and you know, some of us have formed friendships. Like I know I definitely have formed a bunch of friendships with people because of that, and that obviously is going to come across on Twitter or something. But those are really. Those are real. We're not trying to be a clique or anything, but we're actually, you know, friends now. We're not. I don't know how else to put it.
Because there's things I've shared with
Sam.
No, you
put that pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, there's things I'd share with Thad or Sam or and Tracy that I wouldn't share with my general Twitter stream necessarily. So, yeah, it's just one of those things, I think. So,
and we're all learning how to have semi-private conversations in public, because that's. In a lot of ways, that's what Twitter does and really well and for a small portion of its traffic. And it's kind of hard because on one hand, we could totally just do this over email and nobody sees it. But I'm not entirely sure that that's something everybody is always good either. You know, because sometimes we'll have good ideas thrown back and forth on Twitter and then other people get involved and it becomes something really awesome. And imagine if we moved all of those conversations to private, that just wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and that's exactly, I couldn't agree with any of that more. I mean, that, you know, think about people who have like hundreds of thousands of followers. Like just think. So you have a 2K something, 2,300 or something followers, right? So imagine if every tweet that you tweeted got a 10% of your followers to respond, okay? Because I have like almost 900 or 905 or something followers, right? So I've got 900 people who, you know, may read something that I tweet during the day, which I've cut back my tweeting a whole lot just because I got busy at work and there's different things going on. But if I get a 10% return, that means I have 9 tweets in my stream that are talking to me. And then that may turn into 9 more and 9 more if we have a conversation. So that's, you know, a half hour of reading 9 different people's takes on whatever the conversation is. Now imagine that if 10% of your tweet stream is, instead of being 9 people, if it's 90, right? I mean, it's just impossible to keep up with that. It's just not possible. And that was right. Sort of my point was, it's just impossible to spend all your time doing that. Because Twitter is a, as much as I love it, I had to cut back because it's a tangential thing. It's not the focus of what I'm doing, you know? I ended up having these really great conversations on Twitter and spending a lot of time on there and neglecting my blog and neglecting talking to people in email and on Skype and stuff that I could also have really great conversations with. And I didn't have the balance. I've got much more of a balance now. But it's just impossible to maintain a balance if you've got 3,000 followers and every single one of them expects you to notice when they say something.
Yeah.
So, I have some of the questions left over from Gen Con.
Wow, do you really?
Yeah.
Should we ask questions?
We were actually supposed to do that as like its own episode, though, right?
We can.
Yeah.
No, we're not.
Yeah,
going to.
I'm not sure if we should do that on the Penis and Dungeons episode.
Yeah, I think we should get back together, plan it for next week, and just do next week's episode all questions from Gen Con.
Okay,
we could do that. That's fine.
All right, we do have questions from Twitter for today, though, if we want to get to those.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Sure.
First one is from Online DM. Funny that.
Wow.
And he's asking, what advice do you have for folks who want to submit material to publishers?
Well,
Randall, you had one that made it into the submission process.
Yeah,
right?
It's sort of in limbo at the moment, but I hope to find out by the end of the month what the
okay.
The
well,
final
why not?
I can actually give you a really quick answer to that, where this will actually save Randall a lot of work too. There is a person who tweeted today, and I'll have to find the link, but they tweeted...
Oh, AlphaStream?
Yeah, AlphaStream tweeted a link to a post that they wrote that, let's see, it's on the Wizards community, and basically it's the compilation of all of the submission tips types articles that have been written by people like Chris Sims and Greg Bilsland and stuff like that. Here, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. So that you can deal with that.
Well,
but now Randall can answer. Sorry.
I was going to say the first step is write something that doesn't suck. Now, that sounds really harsh, but seriously, you need to have an original idea. It needs to kind of fit in with what they're doing. And it needs to sort of... and even if it is a really wild idea, expect it to be molded to what they want, because that's and you got to be able to give that up, you know, some of that artistic control, if you will, because if you're going to publish for a big company, you're going to need to be able to adapt to their needs. They don't care about you. It's their needs that's important. So, you know, and keep trying. I mean, even if that one thing that you thought was your baby didn't get subjected, then try something else. If you really want to break into that part of the industry, then that's what you got to do. Everything I've ever heard is keep writing and keep trying and don't stop. And if Wizards won't publish your stuff, then try to get someone else. You know, there's all kinds of things. And if all that fails, write a damn blog, because someone will probably read it, you know. And you got to figure out, you got to be writing for yourself. And if you're not, you know, that's my big advice, and most of that advice comes from other people far better at doing this kind of thing than I am. So,
I have an addendum to that.
By all means.
So your tip was write stuff that doesn't suck, and my tip is that doesn't mean just the content. That also means the sentence structure, the grammar.
Oh, yeah, that's
the spelling. Okay, if you write something that seems like it's been written by a 5-year-old just randomly typing on the keyboard, it doesn't matter what the content is. You know, it's that old adage of, you know, when you fill out your resume and it says you pay great attention to details, but details is spelled wrong, they're going to throw
your resume. I was
going to
say, it sounds like you're talking about my resume
yeah,
right now.
It's a serious thing. And I'll tell you what, from being not for publishing companies, but I've been on hiring teams before. And when you get a resume and a cover letter that seems like a high schooler wrote it, it doesn't matter what it says. That person could be an astronaut, okay? And they're awesome, but they can't write. So I'm not going to hire them to write something for me.
Yep. And it would be nice, and Sam, it's good that you added that. It would be nice if that went without saying, But it's still, based on information that even I got at Gen Con, it still happens a lot. So it's like, get someone to look at your stuff before you submit it, just to give it the laugh check and to make sure that, you know, that your writing is at least, you know, understandable and reasonably constructed, so.
Yeah, well, and the read it aloud thing. The other thing is that these companies, a lot of these companies have a lot of people who want to write for them. Every time they take on a writer, that's a certain amount of time and effort they have to expend, not only just in the money to pay the writer if they produce something good, but, you know, explaining them how their system works, like, because a lot of people don't understand it, giving them directions, reading, proofreading, all that stuff takes time. So you're trying to convince them that you're a good bet versus going with someone they already know, if you're trying to break into this. So that's one of the reasons, I think, that they ask you to keep submitting, is because, one, your ideas will get better as you throw out more of them
at them.
And the other thing is it shows persistence. One of the big problems in the industry are freelancers that just drop off the face of the earth and never submit their stuff. So, and if you can blog and keep a blog up, that also helps prove that you can write consistently. Because having great ideas is great, but what they really need are people who can write and who are reliable and turn their stuff in.
Yep. Well, okay, deadlines are important, yes.
Well, that was going to be my question, James. As someone who's worked in the game industry as an artist, how do you go about getting art published? Kind of flip the question.
You know what? A lot of what you guys have said is applies to art as well. You know what? Well, I had to try. I submitted over and over and over again, and it took dogged persistence to get my first job. And then once you get your first job, then you've got to show that, you know, even if you're not that good, and in the beginning you're not going to be good, whether you're writing or you're drawing, you're just not. But if you can hit your deadline, if you can show them that you're competent and that you don't have to be handheld, that you just do it, you know, do what they ask you to do and you do it, then you're going to get more work. Because that's what, like, an art director or creative director, what they want is somebody who they can kind of fire a deadline off to, and they'll get work back that it might not be stellar, and it probably won't be in the beginning, but it'll be consistent, and they don't have to worry about it. And I think that's really important. Like, you've got to show professionalism. I might be coming way out of left field here, especially with the writing. In this day and age, do you really need a company?
There is a certain level of validity. I'm making up words again. Certain level of validity that people give to authors who are quote unquote published versus authors who are self published. And so
now are you by validity?
But there's actually another thing. Sorry to cut you off, but for 4th edition D&D, because so much of the system is in the compendium and based on what a player can add to their character from the character builder.
I gotcha.
If you don't get it published by WotC, most people, even if they read it and think it's a good idea, they're not going to use it because they can't put it in the character builder. So
see, that's why you should just write fluff.
Well, yeah. Well, you and I had that conversation earlier. That's a different thing.
If you love it, if you love doing it, like if you are, and who isn't in role playing games because they love it? You don't go into role playing games because it is the moneymaker. Screw Hollywood. Role playing games is where you make the big bucks. No, no one is there. Like, they love the hobby, and they feel that, you know, there's people that they connect with everywhere. Everywhere across the country, there are gamers. And you can connect with them through the shared experience. So if you're going to be writing, and most people are, just for the 5 to 7 people that you play with on a regular basis, you're going to be, you know, invested in it. Just do it. Do it regardless of whether somebody is going to pick it up. And if someone won't publish it for you, publish it yourself.
Yeah.
Go find a place to do it. Make an ebook. So if 12 people for in the entire span of human existence, if 12 people download your ebook, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's 12 people who got something out of something that you wrote. You know what? It doesn't matter if somebody else is getting more popular than you. You're doing it because you love it. Like, I drew these things because I love my son, and I love Dungeons & Dragons, and I wanted to draw something for him. I put it up on my blog because that's kind of second nature. If I draw something, I'm throwing it up there. At no point did I draw it assuming that, you know, people were going to see it. I drew it because I wanted to do it. Just draw it because you want to do it. Write it because you want to write it. And if that passion, if you're somewhat competent, will shine through. And if you get lucky, then you get lucky and you get published. And if you don't get lucky, weigh the pros and cons on, is it causing you too much stress not getting the recognition you deserve? And if that's the case, then, you know, just stop putting it out there for people, but keep writing it.
Yeah, I think the nature of social media has given – I mean, it used to be people would toil in silence. You would send in your magazine article or whatever.
Oh, yeah. When I started in the fantasy illustration industry, there was no social media. Yeah. Like, I was painting and I was mailing paintings in. There was no right. – there's an art website that everybody posts stuff to. I don't do it, but
DeviantArt?
DeviantArt, yeah. There was no DeviantArt. You couldn't go on DeviantArt and look for 20 minutes and go, God, I'm terrible. There are people out there just doing this for no money, and they're so much better than me. Dude, if there was a DeviantArt back in the 90s, I would never have started. But there's people out there on DeviantArt who's just – they're just posting stuff because they love to post it and because there's a small community there who will give them feedback. And really, any artist, whether you're a writer or somebody who draws or whatever, that's all you really want. You want positive feedback. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you even want negative feedback. I know when I was a fantasy illustrator, the only press I ever got was horrible press. People hated my work in ways that I was like, what? I draw skin like demon apples? Why do people even write that?
Wow, that's awesome.
But, you know, I didn't stop doing it. I just kept doing it. I figure – and you know what? I never got a name. When I was in the business, and you know what? The reason why I didn't get a name is because, I think if I can impart anything tonight, it is this thing. Now I'm going on a rant, but I didn't get a name back in the 90s because I wasn't willing to put myself completely out there. I wanted people to go, hey, look, there's this really good art. Who is this guy? And I never made myself available ever. I just did the work and just expected that if I did the work, then people would be like, oh, he's that guy. But that's not true. You got to do the work and take the lumps and connect with people and enjoy it. And if you can't do that stuff.
And you have to sell yourself a little bit too.
You do. You totally do. You really do. You are your best PR. But a lot of that is, and you guys have touched on this before with the tier stuff, you got to be genuine. You can't go in there expecting that you're going to be big or acting like that. Or if that's your goal, then you're in the wrong business. You don't want to be big in the role-playing game industry. Go be big someplace that pays money. You're here because you love it. And if you love it, do it because you love it, and people will realize that you love it, and hopefully you'll get the feedback that you want. And really, that's all it's about.
Well, I think we've really covered that question, so let's move on to the next
one. Yeah, I'm sorry, I ranted quite a bit. I apologize. That was like 20 years in the industry. It's what that was.
That makes you an awesome guest, is what it makes you. So.
Yeah. No, it's, I actually like hearing the two different answers from Tracy and James because they're both freelancers in the industry, and I think that our
listeners... I would call myself that now.
Well, but
I haven't done it in a long time.
Okay, but you have several years of experience, and you've got books and books and books that you've done illustrations for. So that puts you in that group by default.
Yeah,
at least the way I use that term. Sure. So, it's interesting to see the sort of relatively new freelancer and the freelancer who was doing it long before, and seeing the different perspective. And I think that our listeners and lots of the people on Twitter, for example, really need to hear what you just said.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. I agree with that. Well, good. I'm glad I didn't just rant.
I do have to point out that that's probably the number one most asked question
that we've
answered, though, is it comes up probably at least once a month.
So. Oh, I bet it does. I mean, I've heard that question since I was asking it like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. How do you get in? But there isn't an in. You just do the work. It's an industry. It's not like a pool. You don't jump into it, swim around.
Right. Well, it's kind of like that line thing, like not knowing when you got over the line.
When you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, I never saw that line. Because if I had seen the line, then I would have been, yes, I'm on that side of the line, finally. But you never see the line. I wonder if Guy Gax ever saw the line. I wonder if he was like, yeah, there's the line all the way back there. I see it.
He did. Never mind. I was going to say he did when Lorraine Williams came in. But anyway, so next question.
So the next question is, let's see. What are your thoughts on buying and training feats and skills outside of level?
Who asked that?
That Dark Patu, D-A-R-K P-A-T-U. So I think it's pronounced Dark Patu.
Okay. What's the question again? Sorry, I'm taking show notes as I go. Otherwise, they won't get written.
So what are your thoughts on buying and training feats or skills outside of level, both through story and roleplay? So the idea is, how do you feel about allowing players to have extra feats by doing something special to get them, either buying them or roleplaying or, building them through the story?
Build themes. You're talking about specifically 4E now?
Yep.
Build themes.
Okay.
So your thoughts are don't do it, use themes instead?
I know that's a 180 degree method from what I've spoken about in the past here on the DM Roundtable, and I'm willing to admit that, but yeah, particularly for heroic players, yeah, use themes. But...
So my thoughts are, if it works for your group, then do it. If you want a group, if you think that it'll make your group able to, develop their characters more quickly or in a better way or some way that you're not experiencing at this point, then yeah, make changes. The danger that you run into is of course breaking the system or overpowering the PCs or whatever. But as the DM, if you're able to deal with that, and you can make fun stories out of them learning something new in terms of a feat or skill or something outside of leveling up or whatever, then go for it. Why not? I don't see any problem with that as long as you're fine with it and it's what your group wants. I don't necessarily think that it should be a codified change in the system. I think the system is flexible enough for you to implement it with your group without actually damaging anything if you do it in a sort of slow way.
Anybody else?
Do it. He specifically said story, right? Like if it fits the story?
Yep.
If it fits the story, just role play it and then wait till you level and get what you want. It just sounds like you're trying to get one over on the DM, and I don't like that.
So I think for me, part of it is that maybe another way of tackling this would be to tackle the feat tax issue and then do what James said, which is to, you know, have it part of the story. And then next time you level, pick a feat that fits Fun well. I mean, one of the problems is that we often have to spend feats to make
just
our character
keep up. Yeah.
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 So that's probably how I would want to tackle it, or do it very rarely, like maybe one extra feat per tier. I wouldn't do more than that, though. Or I mean, it also depends on what feats you're picking. If you're picking feats that really only have a story purpose or a roleplay purpose, then I find that a little different than something.
Yeah,
I would be
more okay with that.
Yeah.
Than it was
yeah,
more
that's...
combat. If it's a combat feat or something, I would probably.
Yeah.
Just
well,
say
I was
no
sort
wait.
Of. I sort of assumed it was just like feats that are not super combat focused, because otherwise the whole level progression, that's what it's meant to do.
Yeah.
So you don't need to change it. I was talking more about, I guess my sense was the maybe there wasn't enough role playing and story to them actually gaining feats and whatnot that are not combat related. And so
to me, you know, feat implies a crunchy rule.
In yeah, me words, too. When it says
rule,
feet.
Yeah. And it may be not, it may not be a combat feat, but it may be, but it's still going to affect a die roll somewhere. So if that's the case, then to me that's, maybe you're talking about something else then and not really a feat. So it's like, you can add whatever you want, like Sam was saying, in the story, don't call it a feat, call it something else, or call it just part of the story. But,
Well, my default answer is still, if that's what your group wants to do, then do it. But you also need to be able to recognize if it's not working or if it's making your players too powerful, then you have to do something about that.
Right.
And the DM needs to use some table management that fits that person's style and that group's play style. You know, I'm always a proponent of play the game you want to play, and if the game you want to play includes buying feats and skills outside of level progression, then make that, you know, it's the 4E system is flexible enough for you to work that in. Now, you still need to keep your eyes open and recognize if it's going to break your game.
Right. You can also look into boons, because they can give temporary bonuses to mechanics or story stuff, but you don't have to worry about how it's going to play out when you get to Paragon or Epic. Mm-hmm. 'Cause it could be, you can limit the boon to a certain area or a certain type of conflict or challenge.
Yeah. Or you can just flat out give role-playing bonuses. You know, if you, like in one game, if you have a warlord who happens to have a good relationship with, you know, with noblemen or something because of his background, then give that person a +1 to their diplomacy anytime they ever speak to a noble person. But that doesn't necessarily.
Yeah, I would totally,
you know,
support that. That's
yeah,
a good,
that's
a good
that's
call.
That's the sort of thing that you do, because it's based on that one particular PC, and it has a seed in the background of that person. But it's also
that's what themes do too,
right?
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
My, yeah, yeah,
my,
yeah.
But I'm just saying, if you don't want to use themes, show, right? Go ahead, Thaddeus.
I agree with Randall's, you know, thought of get a theme, because there are the character I'm playing right now in a weekly game. The theme I took was the scholar, and the scholar has almost no combat application, but it gives you, you know, extra languages and a skill, which was awesome to me. And that's just like taking a couple feats right there. It's like taking a skill training feat and a language feat. Right. So I just got two non-combat feats for free. I'm in my games, you know, if anyone wants to take the ritual casting feat, I'll always give them that. You know, I'll give that one to them for free. But I look at feats as every character is supposed to be like this pretty awesome, you know, very heroic person, but even they have, you know, chinks in the armor. And I've always looked at feats as ways of filling those. And you have to decide which ones am I going to fill? You know, am I going to be more defensive? Am I going to be more offensive? You know, am I going to be defending against this or that? And if you start giving people free feats, then, you know, suddenly, just like Tracy said, it's hard to know what that's going to be like in Paragon or Epic tier. Or, you know, are the characters suddenly just going to be basically unchallenged by everything because you've just kept giving them whatever they want, and suddenly the game is just kind of broken to, and without any ability to fix it. So I say don't do it if you can avoid it.
So that was like four equally good opinions. So listeners, roll a D4 and then just
do what I said because I'm right. But anyway,
yeah,
then fudge the die rolls or whatever you want.
That's right. No, that's the easiest way to figure out which one you actually want is to flip a coin or roll a die. Because if the one that you really don't want deep down comes up, you're gonna not use that one anyway. That's how you truly figure it out, right?
That's true.
So D&D, who's what? No.
Go ahead.
No.
No, I was going to make a joke. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, make a joke. I want to hear if Tracy's joke is funny.
No pressure. I was just going to do the whole I'm happy to see you.
All right, so D&D Jester.
Next, what is it? What's the name?
D&D Jester.
Yes.
Okay.
Wait, what's the name again?
You know him.
What was that name?
No, I do know him. He's awesome.
He states that he's planning on going to his first Gen Con in 2012, and he wants to know how much money does he need, hotel cost and whatnot. And I'm going to answer first because I went to my first Gen Con this year, and I just got done doing my budget from the summer to roll into going into my winter budget, and I figured out that I spent about $2,700 on Gen Con this year. My very first Gen Con. And I know that could have been cut way down, but that's including airfare and hotel stay and a lot of food and a very lot of alcohol. A great deal of alcohol was spent. So
I would have said 2,000, but even if he's within driving distance, you could probably even do it for less.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to think about 800 of that up for me was just the plane.
That's airfare. Yeah, that's 800. And I drove for far less. And if you can room with extra people that are sharing your room, oh wow, you can really cut the cost down.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
but at the same time, it's worth it to get a hotel that's very close to the convention center.
Oh man, is it ever?
Pay the extra $100 or whatever it is.
Is it ever? Yeah, I was looking at like these airport hotels that were like $60 a night, and I was just like, I could do that, or I could stay at this $123 a night hotel, and you know, it was connected to the convention center. Some of the convention stuff was actually going on in my hotel, so you know, that's the best way to, especially if it's your first. You know, your first couple, you definitely want to do it that way, and then maybe if you know things start to become old hand and you just or old hat and you just don't you know care as much about it, maybe then you can start moving further out. But you definitely want to save up a good amount of money for your first Gen Con.
Because you want to buy all the things.
I must have all the shiny.
See, I didn't. I bought almost nothing, though. I spent all my money on experience versus product. You know, it was going out and going out drinking with a bunch of people or going out to dinner.
Schmooze money.
It was all about just hanging out with as many people as I could, which is why the hotel attached to Gen Con came in so handy. Because, you know, at 3 a.m., you don't want to have to head back to the airport, you know, in a taxi or something.
Although, as much schmoozing as you did, I don't think you were as many places as Rolling 20s was.
Oh, no.
Mr. Gen Con was everywhere. That Tracy was awesome.
Tracy is like a freaking presence at Gen Con. And it was fun hanging out with him because he was teaching me how to be a presence at Gen Con, which was great. So,
yeah.
And I have to thank him because he basically got me a free copy of The One Ring.
Hell, that's right. I remember hearing about that.
Yeah. And a shout out to Rolling 20s, you know. Yeah. And he's now writing for This Is My Game. So
that's right. Yes.
Yeah. Anyone else? Tracy, do you have anything you want to say? I know you.
It's expensive.
Well, okay.
No, but it's awesome. I think our hotel was about $800 for the nights of Gen Con. But we couldn't get roommates because it's my husband and I, so.
Yeah, we had teenagers with us, so we're not doing that next year. It'll just be Anna and I next year.
Well, maybe it could be Anna and you and Tracy and Fred.
No one wants to have that happen.
Okay, then.
Right, Tracy?
Right. I don't think Fred's
she has no answer for that. She has no answer for that whatsoever. Mm-hmm.
That's because she's nice. She doesn't want to have to make a very rude comment.
All right, well, we have one last question.
Who's it from?
This is from Triska JM. Triskal JM. Triskal JM. Now everybody on Twitter listening knows how to spell that name. So.
All right, that sounds awesome.
I'll just call him Trisket. I know who that is.
And that's
Trisket.
That's the when you're designing, how much testing do you do on it?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes, yes. And my answer is zero. I'm not designing products for print or for publication. I design products on my website. I even have a column that I do maybe once a month where I don't even fully design it. I just write down I had a great idea for this. This is how I would do it. You know, if somebody wants to try running with this, here you go. But
How does that work? Do you get feedback? Good.
I get feedback, and it's usually people tell me, "Oh, that is so broken! I can't believe you would do that." It's just like, "Listen, man, this is
at least you didn't have to test it, though."
Yeah, this is me just saying, "Hey, I had this idea," you know. And
hey, that resembles remarks I've left on your blog.
Why? Yes, I do. I do believe that's actually a column you commented on, and that's fine because it's not. You know, this is not a product I'm putting out for sale or something that I'm saying like, here's this perfect product. It will integrate perfectly into your game seamlessly. You know, it's ideas I have. You know, I put out like a card deck that is a lot of fun, and I put it out in a pretty early stage at one point and said, "Here, play with it and test it." And I actually had three people who played with it, and then they sent back ideas and notes, and then it, you know, I tweaked a little bit and it got better. So I put things out on the website very early into design. Because I'd rather have people playing with it and telling me how it really works than, you know, me trying to get together groups of players here in town and be like, okay, will you please play with this? A, it's time consuming, and B, you know, why not? Why not just let everybody else be involved in that design process, right?
No, I like that. That's good crowdsourcing. That's cool. I want to try that.
Sorry, go ahead. Sam.
I was just going to say, James, your first step is to put those character sheets into PDF form so that we can easily download them all.
Well, most of them, half of them are. All the boys are. Although I don't have a reliable host yet. I'm using this mega upload thing that is terrible.
I would love to host your files. You can.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
I can load them up to my server. And you can attach them link them right to your blog, and it'll download automatically.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
If he can't
figure that out, you just give me a call. We'll take care of you, Matt.
Never mind. Anyway. So in terms of testing, so I typically write less crunchy stuff. I write more how to do things in your game and things about how I think about the game and sort of food for thought type stuff. I don't really write a lot of crunch usually. At least, well, that's not true. I do for my own personal adventures that I write for my groups and stuff, but I don't usually post those up. But even all of the stuff that I put on the blog is usually, I usually write an article about it because I've had an experience with it, and I'm either telling about my experience, or I'm asking people what they think about the experience, or I'm saying, here's what happened and it made me think of this differently, and I thought maybe it would help you think of it differently. And I just get feedback that way. So it's not really a playtest type situation. Usually if I playtest stuff, it's just with my home group. So.
Yeah, when I've put stuff on my blog, it's every now and then I'll get a feedback that says, "Hey, that's a great idea. I'm going to steal that." To me, that's great praise. It's like, knock yourself out, man. It's like, cool, you know. And it happens often enough that I'm still blogging. So,
well, yeah, and that's the thing. We're putting out free content. You know, someone comes along and says, "I'm going to steal it." It's like, no, man. This is what this is for. We put this out there so you take it and you do what you want with it. I'm not going to show up at your house and be like, you're not using my idea right. So I'm going to take it back. Tracy will do that. I've heard stories. She's like, you put my idea in a dungeon? No.
Listen, let me tell you, no dungeons.
Yeah. You gotta read the disclaimer on her site.
That's the alt text.
What about like a classical dungeon? Just a dungeon where people are tortured under a castle. How about that?
That's
no monsters, just like poor dudes in loincloths. That's all.
That's her house.
Yeah, it's my house. With the loose women and alcohol?
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
That voice you hear in the background screaming and moaning? Yeah, that's Fred.
All right. Well, I know we are bridging on like the 2 hour mark right now, aren't we? We're gonna go
hour and a half.
Yeah, hour and a half. Yeah.
I don't know. It just feels like forever with you guys. Jeez.
Thanks. I take that as a compliment.
That's a compliment. Yeah. So wait. No more Twitter questions. Is that what?
Actually, I think I just found one more Twitter question that we hadn't answered.
All right.
It was a little further down the stream. I had missed it, and it's from Hzurr, Hzurr.
Yes.
He says setting tailored PC. All right, yeah, that was great. I'm doing really well here.
Yeah.
This is what happens when the dyslexic guy starts reading out loud. Setting tailored PC themes in Neverwinter. I'm guessing that we as the royal we, the host here, want these for all settings, or was it a nice one-time thing?
Would
you like to see themes for all the settings?
Themes first showed up in Dark Sun, so I would, and I ever since then, I said they were a wonderful thing that we should have in all settings, but
I agree with Sam.
Yeah, so Neverwinter is actually a second instance of themes in 4th edition. And I think they're awesome. I think we should use. In fact, I've started to generate some for my own homebrew world that I'm still trying to work on. And so, yeah, I think they're wonderful. I think they're a good thing.
Now, that said, you can adapt them for your own campaign by simply matching the, you know, like, for example, if you've got a gladiatorial situation in your campaign setting, you could certainly use a Dark Sun theme that's related to gladiators to be able to, you know, to fit that in your own campaign. But I'm with Sam, they are I really think they are the way to tie in your character's background with your theme of your campaign. So it stands to reason that you would have themes specific to your own campaign. Now, that said, I think they ought to be putting out some information on how to build themes appropriate to your campaign setting. I think that would be a nice thing to have.
That would be good.
Yeah. It's like, you know, here are some basic guidelines or whatever that when you're coming up with themes, you know. And so
anything
what's out of
that
bounds,
gives
what's
characters
not,
more background, I'm all for.
Yeah.
And if it gives players a little bit of crunch, then they'll also want it too.
Right. Well, I
can
think
you tell
really
I DM
in
more than I play?
Yeah. Well, and I think they fill in really nicely between, you know, we've always had Paragon Paths and we've always had Epic Destinies. Well, now we have, at the heroic level, character themes. And it's literally the first step in that three-piece bit that's supposed to design your character, I mean, to grow your character's background and experience and things. So I think it's just a tidy fit.
You know, I never thought of themes that way, but you're right.
Yeah.
They're like the tailoring the heroic level.
Yep.
Oh, now I want to use them more.
See, now this is what sold me, my friend. And this is what, when that clicked, I'm like going, bing, bing, bing. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man, if you sell it exactly like that, everybody will want one. They're like, oh, yeah, I want to be that gladiatorial guy then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, they should really push themes more that way.
Well, and this themes brings us back to the first question, which was getting published. This is something I had wanted to say, but I didn't weigh in on that topic. Know what's popular when you're trying to get published, and don't write about it. And what I mean is, like, themes are huge right now, right? Like, everybody is loving themes. And from what I've been told, they have, like, just a million submissions that are all, here's a theme I wrote, here's a theme I wrote. And so unless you wrote, like, the world's best theme, chances are it's just going to sit on the pile with all the other, you know, 500 themes that people have written up. So know what's popular and be different. Like, that's, I think that's why Randall's submission was taken as far as it is, because his is completely different. But anyway, I'm bringing up a completely dead topic, so...
Well, I hope not entirely.
No, no, you're bringing up anti-themes. Everyone should write anti-themes.
But
that's right.
I love themes. I think themes are great for Essentials characters, and so I would love to see them... and like they said, it's a great way to tie a character into a specific setting. So seeing themes pop up for like Eberron and Forgotten Realms, which I guess Neverwinter could just be straight Forgotten Realms themes, right? But, you know, seeing even like Shadowfell themes and that kind of stuff start to pop up would be really great. Feywild themes.
You know what the themes do for me? There was always... I don't know about everybody else's, but you know, they have the background options for the different settings and whatnot. And you can go into the character builder and say, oh, I want the, you know, spell plagued background or whatever. And those never quite, there was just something about them. They didn't have enough oomph I don't know what it was, but they never quite caught on with my group. At least I can only speak for my group and groups I've played in. And so we sort of just never use them. It's like, oh, no backgrounds, because the bonus is sort of a, oh, plus two to something, and it's just sort of a throwaway bonus. Whereas themes really are more than that. They're meant to actually give your character somewhat of a motivation, somewhat of a sort of reason for why that PC has something, you know, depending on what theme. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of people write like a three-sentence background for their PC, and they don't really think much more about that. And I happen to have a group where they write some pretty extensive backgrounds, so I don't really have this problem. But I've been noticing and I've been hearing a lot of people talk about how, you know, people don't write huge backgrounds, and themes are a way to get them interested in their background. And Tracy, I stomped all over you, so what's up?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, like, they did come out in Dark Sun, and a lot of people really like them from Dark Sun, but I think they really came in their own in Neverwinter because of the factions.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the factions have tie-ins to the themes, and they explain to the DM how the different groups might interact with each other, I think that makes a big difference in seeing them, in particular in seeing them more than just a bonus to your stats.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it helps, but I'm not sure having them all interact is a necessary step if it's going to overcomplicate things for you. I would have trouble personally DMing and trying to keep track of, okay, this group hates this group because this third group did this thing to a fourth group. That would drive me crazy.
Well, even if you don't use them that way, they at least give you ideas of how you can bring your character's background into the story.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. No, I agree.
Up until now that I can recall.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Yeah, it makes them a lot richer, that's for sure. Yeah. So. I love them. I didn't, but I do now.
I know. Yep.
That makes me totally happy. We totally won.
Yep.
I totally brought you over to this side.
I drank the Kool-Aid.
All right, well, on that note, with Randall drinking Kool-Aid and Thaddeus telling me to shut up and Tracy telling me to shut up and James being a wonderful guest, I think we're going to say goodbye.
Yeah. When did I tell you to shut up?
I would like to thank our guest, James Stowe, for being on the DM round.
Oh, dude, thank you guys. This has been awesome. Man, anytime you want me back, I would come back in a heartbeat.
Outstanding.
All right, sounds good.
All right.
Thaddeus, you didn't tell me to shut up, but you probably should have, so...
I was thinking it really loudly, so I just wanted to know if I like actually said it or what. I didn't know if it actually came out or.
Yeah, well, you know, that's what I get for cutting you off. Oh, I mean, yeah. All right, bye everybody. All right.
Bye.
Have a good night.
See you later.
Bye.